This episode of The Ready Room is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, or online store. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com/trek and use offer code TREK5.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Mar Talker on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Ready Room, show number 98, the best little heater out there. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me today is Matthew Rushing. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including release dates for the Enterprise Season 2 Blu-ray set, an expanded soundtrack for the Best of Both Worlds, the premiere of Star Trek Continues, Space.com's Treknology infographic, the History Channel's Star Trek Secrets of the Universe, and pre-order promotions for Into Darkness. Then in the feature, we're joined by Drew Stewart to discuss the classic TOS episode, A Piece of the Action. So let's step into the Ready Room. Oh, hey, Matthew. Hey, how's it going today?
I was gonna go see Into Darkness again for the fifth time, but I mean, I guess we can talk. What's up?
Well, that can wait. Well, I was just wondering, because I wanted to ask you if you could just do the news by yourself today, because I'm really tied up playing Star Trek Rivals. I'm not sure if I have time to record the show today.
Hold on, Chris. I'm actually, Kate just played the last turn, so I need to collect my points. Can you hold on for a second?
All right, I'm leveling up anyway, so yeah, okay. you take care of that.
Well, I mean, I know that that you've been buying the really fancy cards, and so you've been completely creaming my butt. Just crazy.
I got a few of them. So Star Trek Rivals. I mean, this game has taken over like everyone on Trek FM, and so many of our listeners were all playing against each other. This game is insane, Matthew.
It really is. It is super fun. You know, right now I'm not paying for extra cards. I'm trying to keep away from that at the moment. Trying to save some money, and I'm trying not to have to buy extra Latinum. So it's a lot harder, honestly, because I'm playing against some people like you who have gone in and bought some of these really fancy cards. And yeah, I'm getting my ass kicked a lot in this game. But it's a lot of fun. I'm enjoying it immensely. I don't think anything has taken over the Star Trek community online like this since, I guess, Star Trek podcasting.
Maybe, yeah. Well, I will say now, I haven't bought any individual cards. I'm not buying specific cards. I did buy a few of the Captain's Packs, I think they're called.
Oh, nice.
Where you have a better chance of getting elite cards.
Right.
And you have to use Latinum for those. I got a few of those. Now, most of my cards I'm buying with credits that you earn from winning matches or just playing matches. And I'm mostly buying, I believe they're called the Ensign Pack, where you have like two insignia chance of getting elite cards. And I'm actually getting some really good cards from that. So you can do quite well without actually investing any money into that game.
Yeah, this really is a brilliant idea when it comes to just games. I mean, I can't think that this took a lot to put together, and it really is. It's a lot of fun. It's enjoyable, and you can play a lot of games at one time, like I am right now.
Now, how many games do you have going on? Because I have 18 games going at the same time right now.
You know, I don't have as many cards as you because I haven't been playing quite as long, so I can't play that many games, but I think I have 10 games going on at the moment. And yeah, I just got my butt kicked by Shervin, so he's gonna be really excited about that.
You know, what happened to me was I was winning almost all my games, and then as more and more people kept adding me and I started getting 15 16 17 games going, my deck got spread so thin that I was starting to lose all the time because all the cards that were showing up had ones on at least two sides. So you do have to be careful about how many games you get going at once.
And I'm going to show my stupidity here, but I'll be okay with it. I didn't realize, you know, when it let you choose your other cards, you know, it says choose other cards. I wasn't paying attention, and that was costing me Latinum all the time, and I wasn't
Five
paying attention.
Latinum.
And I was like, what the heck happened to all my Latinum? So I have very little Latinum anymore, and I'm really frustrated with that. And so that's one of the reasons why I've thought about maybe going in and buying some packs. Because I really kind of screwed myself pretty badly with that.
I never change my cards, no matter how bad my hand is, because five Latinum is
that's not worth it
in this game. And I actually talked to the developer because I've accidentally hit that button a couple of times trying to hit the one below it. And there's no, once you hit it, the Latinum's gone. And I asked them about it, and I said that it would be great if there were a cancel button or a confirmation button of some sort so you could back out.
Right.
And they said that they've already put that in as a feature request because other people have said the same
thing.
So if you're listening and it's happened to you, that is going to be one of the updates coming up at some point in the game.
But on a whole, I this is a fantastic game. If you're not playing it, find Chris and I on there. You know, you won't be sad that you played Star Trek Rivals because it's just a blast.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, hit us up on Twitter and we'll give you our friend codes on Twitter. I don't want to read them out on the show because it's kind of weird to read a bunch of letters and numbers out. We'd be happy to play with you there. But all right, Matthew, well, let's jump into other news this week. And the first one is something that we talked a little bit about in the past, which is Enterprise Season 2 coming to Blu-ray. We didn't really know when it was going to land, though, because they had just kind of said it's coming up. They hadn't given us a release date. Now we finally do have release dates. It's August 20th in the United States. It's August 19th in the UK and August 21st in Australia.
Yeah, this is going to be another great set. You know, they're like they did with the Next Generation. We're going to get a great crew get together, and they're going to get all the crew together. Everyone's going to talk about what it was like to be a part of Enterprise, and really much the same way the Next Generation crew did. I'm very excited to see this. I always enjoyed the Enterprise crew. I think that they were, just in general, I felt like they were great people. And I'm very interested to see how they feel about the show after, you know, 10 years has gone by. I can't believe that it's been that long. They're also going to have a great extra on here called Uncharted Territory. And it's going to be a three-part retrospective talking about the making of Season 2, along with introducing that controversial Zindi arc that happens at the very end of Season 2. So this, I think, is really going to be fantastic. And so I was so happy with the Enterprise Blu-ray extras on the first set. I mean, it sounds like you were as well, Chris.
Oh, yeah. I absolutely loved them. And the image quality, too. Now, I have Enterprise on Hulu here in Japan in 720p HD, which is half-spec HD. And I also have the DVD box sets. And I've been going rapidly through Enterprise again. That's the rewatch I'm doing right now. And I'm in the middle, a little bit past the halfway point of Season 3, the Zindi arc at the moment. But I watched Season 1 on Blu-ray, and then for Season 2, I had to go to Hulu. And I'm watching it in 720p instead of 1080. And it's incredible the difference in the image quality just between those two. And then for fun, I put my DVDs in the other day. And gosh, it's like someone sprayed something all over my glasses. It was so fuzzy. And I remember how we used to think DVD quality was so spectacularly crystal clear. And
are you sure you were just watching Vox Sola, Chris?
Oh, well, yeah, maybe that's what happened to me. I'm all wrapped up. This alien is digesting me somehow. But it's amazing. The quality of the Blu-rays is fantastic. So I'm very glad that Season 2 is going to be landing soon, just a few months to go. And the price, I'm still waiting for that price to come down. It started out around $90 in the U.S. It's down to $83 right now. The UK got that fantastic £24 pre-order price. That's already gone up to £42. So it may continue to climb. So if you're in the UK and you didn't pre-order at 24, make sure you get in there and grab that while it's still at £42. And if you're in the States, keep your eyes open because it'll keep going down. And I think it'll probably be around 63, I think, is what we ended up with for season one and on release date.
Yeah, I would definitely say, you know, I went ahead and did the pre-order, and I know that Amazon is going to have this go down. I think the first season was about $68,
something that, like that
the price was originally, or when it came out. And so that's a really good deal, but I got that because, you know, I had done the pre-order, and they gave me the best price, which was the day of release, had gone down to that amount. And so, you know, I saved a lot of money, and I'm a Prime member, so it was fantastic for me. I had free shipping anyway. So, yeah, I would go ahead and do this. I'm really excited about Enterprise Season 2. I really enjoyed Enterprise Season 2. There's a lot of great episodes in there, Carbon Creek and whatnot. So I can't wait to see all the extras. And plus, we didn't even talk about, but there's some new commentary tracks from Rick Berman, Brandon Braga, Connor Trenier, some of the directors, among others. So they really are putting a lot of effort. And I have to say, I also really love the cover art. I think this cover art is pretty fantastic, personally.
Yeah, the cover for season two, there is new cover art out. It looks fantastic. Of course, the cover art for season one, even though it was a stock image from the launch of the series, also looked fantastic. Both cases are so much better than the stuff that they originally threw out there and asked us to vote on. So they're doing a really nice job with Enterprise. And I'm hearing from more and more fans on Twitter, as well as on GetGlue, who are watching the series for the first time, or they're coming back to it because they abandoned it. And everyone's talking about how much they are loving Enterprise now. So if you didn't like it first time around, do go check it out. And Matthew, while we're on the topic of new releases, let's move on to our next story, which is about music. And this one is from GMP Crescendo. And we just got that feature-length Blu-ray release of The Best of Both Worlds. And now we have an expanded soundtrack coming up.
You know, GNP has been doing a great job with these, as well as La La Land Records has been doing with giving us extended versions of fantastic Star Trek scores. I do not understand, personally, as a soundtrack fan, why studios don't just give this to us in the first place. Because anybody who's buying a soundtrack wants to hear what they heard in the film or the show. That's why we're buying it. We loved the music that we heard in the show or the film. And so just give this to us in the beginning, because I love soundtracks. I studied to them in college and through grad school and seminary. I really enjoyed listening to them, and I enjoy hearing those extended soundtracks. I think the best extended soundtracks I've ever heard were the ones they did for The Lord of the Rings, and they were fantastic. They came in these great boxes. They had a DVD version that you could do 5.1 surround sound. You could pop it in for that.
Okay.
They were two discs long, so like packed full. I'm very glad that finally that all these Star Trek soundtracks are getting this kind of treatment.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to ask you, you brought up the point of why don't they just do this in the first place? And they say that some of the shorter cues from The Best of Both Worlds were left off of the original CD, which was also released by GMP Crescendo, to facilitate a better album experience. But, you know, I mean, I appreciate the old art form of making an album, which, you know, is a lost art form in this day of iTunes, where people buy songs a la carte instead of buying albums. But, you know, you remember back in the day, artists would create albums that were designed to be listened to from start to finish, and the tracks led into each other, and you gain something by listening to an entire album that way. But in the case of a soundtrack from an episode or a film like this, like you said, I want to hear all the cues that I heard in the film. Do you feel like a record company needs to create a better album experience for you when you're buying a film soundtrack?
I'd actually say yes. I think the album experience that I expect when I buy a soundtrack is that it's going to be what I heard in the film, because that's why I'm buying the
music.
Well,
exactly. That's what
I liked what I heard in the film. Yeah. So the experience that I expect when I get one of these is that I'm going to be hearing in chronological order the music that I heard in the film. And that's another thing that really bothers me is when soundtracks aren't in chronological order.
Right.
You know, it just messes to me with the enjoyment of the music, because part of the music is being able to hear it and kind of picture what's happening in the film. And then the best soundtrack music is the music that transcends the film itself, so that as I listen to it, I can also imagine lots of other things. And that's really, to me, what makes a fantastic soundtrack. And one of the things that's made some of the greatest Star Trek soundtracks so popular for me, you know, I always loved Star Trek VI soundtrack because it sounded like the planets.
Yeah.
And yet, at the same time, it also was Star Trek. And both of those things put together, it actually made it feel much more like I was listening to a classical score that somebody would have put together than just a movie soundtrack. And so I really liked that, and very thankful that these companies are working so hard to give us some great experiences musically from Star Trek.
Yeah, so. Definitely. So one note, if you happen to have the Ron Jones collection, if you happen to have the Ron Jones collection that was released in 2010 by Film Score Monthly, you don't have all the material that's going to be on here. There were 5 extra minutes released as part of that collection, but because of contractual obligations, Film Score Monthly was still not able to release all of the missing cues and the missing music from The Best of Both Worlds. So now, I actually, Matthew, I have access to the Ron Jones collection, and I listen to it fairly often. I have a service here in Japan that's operated by Sony called Music Unlimited. It's kind of like, I think it's kind of like Spotify, that type of service in the States.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's a music streaming service, and they've got like 13 million tracks in the service, but they have the entire Ron Jones collection in there. And that's a great collection, and I'm glad I'm able to listen to it without having to buy the whole thing, because it's extremely expensive, even though it's very complete. But even that collection isn't truly complete of everything that Ron Jones put together. So if you love the music from The Best of Both Worlds, you'll want to pick this up. It's available right now. They're already shipping it. You can order it over at the GNP Crescendo website, and it's $19.95. So we will put a link to that in the show notes, and you can grab that before it's gone. I don't really see any information about it being a limited release, but I'm sure there's probably a finite number of these that they're producing. So go over and check that out. Matthew, friend of the show, Larry Nemechek, is once again a TV star as Star Trek Continues has premiered.
Wait, is he starring in the brand new Bosom Buddies remake?
Shh, Matthew, that he told us not to talk about that.
Oh, crap. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm so off tonight, Chris. I mean, I'm trying to juggle, you know, playing my Star Trek Rivals and doing the news. I'm so sorry, Larry.
I know, it's very distracting, and yeah, we're not supposed to let the cat out of the bag on that one quite yet.
Oh, so, epic fail.
Or should I say the man out of the dress? I don't know, what would it be on a Bosom Buddies, fan-made Bosom Buddies series?
Oh, man.
But no, Phoenix Comic Con has been going on. And last Friday, Star Trek Continues premiered with their first episode, which was called Pilgrim of Eternity. And Larry is playing Dr. McCoy in this new series.
You know, Chris, I thought this was... I watched some of the vignettes for this, and my favorite probably had to be their vignette for the Turnabout Intruder, our favorite episode on the Ready Room of TOS, and just a fantastic episode. And I loved how they were able to turn that strange episode into a laugh at the very end in this little vignette. So And it looks good. It's well shot. It looks very much like TOS. And so, you know, if you just would love to be able to see something that looks just like an old TOS episode and kind of feels like that, these are great.
Yeah, they're doing a great job with it, you know, just like Phase 2 / New Voyages has done with their fan-produced series. And they've put together quite a cast here. I think most notable for Star Trek fans would, apart from Larry, of course, playing Dr. McCoy, would be Chris Duhon, son of James Duhon, playing his father's role of Scotty.
And he really is, Chris, hands down, fantastic. I cannot give Chris enough props. The accent that he uses is perfect. He really just exudes his father's charisma as Scotty. And so I loved watching Chris in this little vignette, these little vignettes when he was on. I cannot speak highly enough to what he did. It really did feel like, in some ways, that Scotty was back on screen as we knew him in TOS.
Yeah, that is really wonderful. I'm so glad that they were able to get him in there, because I love having that connection to the original series. You know, Matthew, I've created a game for myself, actually, when I watch these vignettes and when I watch the first episode here. The game is, I'm trying to figure out which character in Star Trek Continues is being played by Jeffrey Combs.
He is everywhere.
You know, what I love about this is that even Jeffrey Combs is in Star Trek Continues. strangely enough, I think he just is playing a token Andorian, just walking in the background. They needed one. They called Jeffrey up. He was, you know, very happy to do that. I don't know if we get any Andorian fight scenes.
I'll take your blood to Andorra.
It might be him in there. You know, I was thinking that he might be playing Uhura. You know, they claim that Uhura is being played by Kim Stinger. But, you know, Jeffrey, he's a chameleon. You never can be quite sure.
He really is good. I mean, honestly, Jeffrey can play any part. Again, it's why I think that him and Larry should do the Bosom Buddies remake.
They should do that together. You know, as I work my way through season 3 of Enterprise, there's someone else who I'm learning is also everywhere, and that's Susie Plaxen.
Oh, I love her. I just love her. Anytime that she is in an episode, I really do. I just enjoy everything she brings. I mean, can we just talk about Solar for a minute? My favorite Vulcan. In fact, they should have a show just called My Favorite Vulcan with Solar as the main character.
So it'd be like My Favorite Martian, but it would be My Favorite Vulcan.
Exactly. It would be fantastic. I would never stop watching that show. I'm just a huge fan.
She really is everywhere, too. You know, again, Dr. Solar, as you mentioned, she played Kalar as well on TNG. She was a female Q in the Q and the Gray on Voyager, and of course she plays the Andorian Tara in Ceasefire on Enterprise. It's just, she's everywhere.
Yeah, I think is just the female Jeffrey Combs. and so, yeah, it is really cool when she's on. I always enjoy her performances, and so, yeah, hopefully we can find a way to have the Solar show, and we are going to make a lot of happy Star Trek fans.
We definitely will. I mean, all you have to do is talk to some of our listeners on Twitter to find out that Solara would make them very happy.
Who wouldn't be made happy by Solar?
That's right. All right. Well, Star Trek Continues. Yes, it has premiered. Larry told me there were about 4,000 people at the premiere at Phoenix Comic Con, so that's a great turnout. And you can watch the three vignettes that have been released, as well as Pilgrim of Eternity, the first full episode, on Vimeo. And if you go to the Star Trek Continues website, which is surprisingly at startrekcontinues.com, you can find all the videos right there. You can stream them on the site, or you can click through to Vimeo, watch them there. You can also find out more about all of the cast and crew, and go check that out. And we'll put links to that in the show notes as well. Matthew, I was looking through and I found this interesting infographic on space.com, and StarTrek.com pointed this out to fans as well. And this is titled Inside the Science of Fictional Treknology. And space.com has gone through and they're focusing primarily on things like warp drive, wormholes for alternate ways to travel across the galaxy, transporters, deflector shields, tractor beams, phasers, photon torpedoes. And they're kind of giving you the scientific background of how all this stuff really works. And, you know, it's fine to talk about that stuff by itself, but, you know, that's what we Star Trek fans do all the time anyway, is, you know, how do we build a warp drive? I was wondering, I wanted to ask you, if you could do more of these infographics, what things about Star Trek, besides all these technologies that I listed right now, would you most want to see explained in an infographic?
Well, you know, with all of the hullabaloo that we've gotten about the Alice Eve scene and her underwear, I just wondered, you know, will underwear ever get more comfortable in space? And does, I mean, every time I just see, you know, Enterprise or, you know, of course, the new film or anything, their underwear just looks like our underwear. Is that technology that's not going to get better? Like, I'm always going to be in some blue cotton briefs like, you know, Archer or, you know, I just don't know. So those are some things I really think would be nice to have, you know.
I don't know, Matthew. It could be that we have already hit the cotton ceiling when it comes to underwear and there's just really nowhere else for us to go.
Yeah, I would hate to think that the pinnacle of, you know, Starfleet underwear would, you know, be silk boxers. But
I think the biggest advancement between our time and Starfleet's future when it comes to underwear is just making it blue.
True. You know, another thing, too, I was thinking it'd be interesting to try and do is, you know, scent the hull, you know, something a little bit more practical. This idea of, you know, the next generation gives a scent the hull where you can be drunk, but you get that kind of feeling and then, you know, be able to shake it off if you need to. And so that actually might be something that would be pretty good to have. You know, I can really enjoy some beverages and not have to worry about driving home.
It could be. You know, I wonder about scent the hull because I don't know what it's like in the States these days, but in Japan, this non-alcohol beer has really become the craze. I don't know if it's the craze amongst consumers who are actually drinking it, but amongst companies producing beer, Kirin, Suntory, Asahi, these companies, producing 0% alcohol beer is a big thing right now. And I don't know why I really want to drink that. And so with Synthahol as well, I'm not sure that I would really want to drink Synthahol. Now, what I would like to drink, of course, would be some good gin. And would love to see one of these space.com infographics that outlines the exact process by which Argyle distills his gin in the Jefferies tubes.
You know, this is true. I can't imagine a better tasting gin than Argyle's. I mean, the way that it runs past the warp core to really give it that special kick that you just can't get any other way. It really makes Hawkeye and Trapper's distillery from MASH look like child's play. And so if you thought their stuff was good, you're really going to want to try this Argyle gin. And hopefully we'll be able to get that warp core created from this article so we can get that Argyle gin.
I hope so. I hope so. You know, another one, and seriously, would be interesting to see, would be inside Phlox's sick bay, because I love all the little animals that he keeps in there. Of course, you know about the leeches and all, but there was the episode Chosen Realm, which I was watching yesterday, where the ship has been hijacked by religious extremists. And the way that he is able to retake sickbay, of course, is letting his bat loose. And you've got this bat flying around the sickbay on a starship. And it made me think even more about how different Phlox's approach to medicine is compared to any of the other doctors in Starfleet, because he's still really like a hands-on doctor who's relying more on nature, less on technology. So an infographic about how does Phlox's sickbay work could really be quite interesting. You know, get a biologist, get a physician to help put that together.
Yeah. Or, you know, I kind of think it might be interesting to have an infographic about the layout of the Federation and Starfleet and how they work together. You know, there's always been this kind of question about the militaristic nature of Starfleet and how that works really with the exploration, and kind of see how that's laid out. I think that might be really interesting. You know, you talk about this utopian society of Star Trek. How does that actually play out, you know, in an organization like the Federation and through Starfleet? I think that would be something really interesting to see as well, just kind of trying to extrapolate those ideas.
That would be cool, yeah, because there's a lot of fan debate, of course, over whether Starfleet is a military organization or whether it's a scientific organization or whether it's a peacekeeping organization or whatever it is. And, you know, it's kind of a little bit of all those things. But yeah, how did it evolve would be quite interesting. Well, the last one I'll throw out here, Matthew, before we go on to the next story, is I would like to see inside the Starfleet School of Fashion, because we know admirals, you know, they like to modify their uniforms. They've all got these custom thread jobs going on. And in the space.com infographic here about technology, they have these little call-outs where they say, who did it first? And I think that would work perfectly with the School of Fashion infographic, where, you know, you talk about the big buckle. Who did it first? And we find out who was the first admiral to really blow up that belt buckle or shoulder pad tassels. You know, who did it first?
I think that would be really good, having the Starfleet admirals belt buckles through the years infographic would just be great. You know, they do that for like the the Superman logo through the years,
right,
but
yeah.
You know, the Starfleet, you know, belt buckle logos through the years would just be excellent. Just kind of watch them get bigger and more ornate as the years go on.
Exactly, yeah. I'm picturing posters of like Coca-Cola bottles where they line up all the different Coke bottles from through the years. Just line up all the different Admiral's belt buckles.
Right. Yes, that would be great.
And right in the center would be the one from Star Trek The Motion Picture.
Oh, yes. And unfortunately, that could not cover all that junk.
The belt buckle would not be the centerpiece.
No.
That's right. All right. But do go check out the actual real infographic here from space.com. We'll put a link to this in the show notes. It's very lengthy. They go into a lot of great information. StarTrek.com, they have the graphic on the site there. But if you go over to space.com to the actual source of that, after the graphic itself, they have a lot of additional text and they have links to other infographics, which you might find interesting. So we'll put a link to that in the show notes. Matthew, let's take a break from news for just a moment and tell everyone about our sponsor, Squarespace. Now, Squarespace is the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, a blog, a portfolio, or even an online store with the Squarespace Commerce feature. Or you can do what I do sometimes in my work for my clients. I actually use Squarespace for the prototyping stage of my work as well, because I'm going to ultimately build the site on Squarespace. And so I just go ahead, I use the 14-day free trial period, I set up the basic website for my client, and I actually do my prototyping and my testing in there so that I can then just easily convert my work over to a full site when I'm done.
Well, and what's cool about that, Chris, is that Squarespace gives you and your website users that mobile experience. You know, it's hard when you go to a site on your iPhone or, you know, your Android device and you're looking at a website and it's not easily readable on a phone. And so having that responsive design, Squarespace takes care of that with its unique mobile design. So your site can automatically scale to look beautiful on every device. So whether you're on iPad, iPhone, or then of course, you know, your computer. everything looks great the way it should. And then you get that awesome opportunity to share through social media, which is so important these days. That, you know, I have my own blog, so I understand how this works, promoting your site and what you're doing there. You can instantly pull from Instagram, which is great these days. So many people posting pictures. You can share your pages on Facebook, auto-publish on Twitter, which is fantastic. So you can set that up, have it tweeted out for you. And you can add all of the social media buttons to connect your services to the ones that people are using. You know, Facebook, Twitter, G+, Instagram, Foursquare, Dropbox, LinkedIn, Pinterest, thousands of others these days. There's so many more. This is what Squarespace can offer to you.
Yeah, it's really excellent. And as I've mentioned on here before, the Facebook one, for example, isn't simply click here, hop over to our Facebook page, but it's actually you can choose a page from your Squarespace site from inside Facebook's interface, and you can share that on your Facebook page. We can do that if you have a Facebook brand page. It's very, very easy to do, and it's a great way to generate traffic for your site, and it really requires just no effort on your part, which is excellent. And yeah, the responsive design is great because it works on, you know, any tablet, any smartphone. And going back to the way I use it for prototyping, responsive design is another reason why I do this. You know, I can build using the drag and drop interface, which is fantastic. And this isn't drag and drop like you just take an image from your desktop and you drag it over instead of going through an upload menu. Now, of course, you can do that, and that is how you can add images. But this is using a series of blocks for different types of content, and you drag them down onto your Squarespace page, and it locks them into a grid for you. And then that's how you build your pages. And I use that for prototyping, and then because of the responsive design that you're talking about, I can actually show my clients what the prototype looks like on the desktop, what it looks like on a tablet, and what it looks like on a smartphone. All at one time, I just have to take some screenshots to drop in, or I can give them the link to the test site and they can check it out for themselves. And it saves me so much time in the development process. And of course, as a designer and a developer, I can make more money myself that way because I can streamline the amount of time I have to put into the work. So that is another great feature of it. And lastly, if you want to set up a shop, you know, if you do crafting, if you're a photographer, if you're an illustrator, you know, if you create anything that you want, maybe you make homemade jam and you want to sell that online, you can do that using the commerce feature. It's very easy. It's integrated with Stripe. It only takes you a few minutes to set it up. And then you can sell both physical goods and digital goods right from your site. You can you know, handle the checkout process. You can handle the shipping setup process. It calculates tax for you as well. It's the simplest way that you can set up a store online. And I know because I've been through this process a number of times using much more complicated methods. So check out the commerce feature as well, and a great way for you to make a little extra money on the side from a small business or run your entire large business if you have that kind of operation going as well. Matthew, if people want to try this, what can they do? How can they go and get set up?
Well, the great thing is, Chris, you can just go to Squarespace. Now, your pricing is $8 for the standard package. You can get the $16 unlimited package, which is really the most popular. And then if you want those commerce features that Chris, you were just talking about, it's $24 a month. And this is fantastic. And that gives you everything that Squarespace has to offer with the commerce feature. Squarespace will take care of the hosting. It'll take care of everything for you. It even makes sure that your site automatically looks great on any device. It's incredibly easy to use. But if you need some help, one of the coolest things, and this is really important for somebody like me, I'm not a computer savant. So Squarespace has amazing support that works 24 hours a day and 7 days a week. And so if you're trying to get into creating your own website, your own blog, your own commerce website, Squarespace is really the place to start because you're not going to be left alone and in the dark. Squarespace is there to help.
Right. They really are. And they're serious about it, too. I talk to Squarespace support, you know, from time to time, not necessarily because there's something wrong with my site, but, you know, I have a question. You know, I see something in the analytics that I want to ask them a question about. And they are right on top of it. They usually answer me in like 2 minutes. If I hit them up through Twitter or email, they're right on top of it. They're extremely helpful. Some of the very best service that I've ever experienced with any company. So check it out. Just go to squarespace.com/trek. You can try it free for 14 days. There's no credit card required. You just enter your name and an email address. And they use that to create the trial site for you, which you will convert into your full site when you're ready after 14 days. And then when you convert from the trial site, use offer code TREK5 to save 10% off your lifetime purchase on new accounts. You're going to love Squarespace, so please go give it a try. And you'll be helping us bring this programming to you each week and supporting our sponsor at the same time.
Chris, we were just talking about a few minutes ago the great infographic that Space.com put out about the science of Star Trek and what's possible, what's not possible. And a few weeks ago, History Channel had put on a great episode called Star Trek Secrets of the Universe. And if you missed it, and if you don't have the History Channel, they've now put it online for fans to be able to watch. I'm really excited about this.
Yeah, that's really nice. And I noticed you paused there a little bit between history and channel. I think they like to be known these days as history, but it just feels weird to say that because I've always called them the History Channel. So I still think of them that way myself. And sadly, well, actually, we do have history in Japan on the cable television here. I don't know, however, how soon we would be getting this special called Star Trek Secrets of the Universe. So I'm going to have to go online myself and watch this. I might have to pull a few strings to do it because I did try yesterday and I got the programming not available, which I assume is because I'm not in the United States. But if you are in the United States, you can enjoy 83 minutes as they delve into the science of Star Trek and the possibility of alien worlds, the physics of warp drive, the possibility of us, you know, someday living on another planet, kind of like Earth or kind of like those that we see in the films and TV series. I guess maybe one covered in red cornfields that we can run through.
Well, I hope so. And then what it looks like to cliff dive, you know, off in an alien world,
any world I live on better have a lot of places I can jump off of. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know what I really think is so cool about this, Chris, is that they're using the new JJ Star Trek to really grab people in. And I love the fact that the History Channel is doing this because it asks a lot of questions, and this is automatically going to lead people back to the other versions of Star Trek. Because these questions don't just come from, you know, JJ's new Star Trek. They're all around because TOS started back in the 60s. And Gene Roddenberry and the creators were able to come up with these brilliant ideas that we are still asking questions to today about warp drive and transporters and all of these things that we want. You know, we've got our communicators with our flip phones and our iPhones and all those kind of things. We still are looking for those big things, though, about warp drives and whether we can go to different planets and what things might look like out there. So these are the kind of things, I think, that make Star Trek great. It makes us ask big questions about what is possible for us as human beings. And history is giving us that question with this great online availability for this episode. So I'm really excited to go and watch this.
Yeah, and I think it's good that they are connecting it to the Abramsverse right now, because that's what all the talk about is with Into Darkness out in theaters right now. So it's a good way to capture everyone's attention and, you know, tie it into Into Darkness. And I personally, yes, I love these things. You know, one of my favorite books was Lawrence Krauss's The Physics of Star Trek, which sadly, I think it was updated once, if I remember correctly, but it hasn't been updated in a very long time. And I originally read it back in the 90s when it first came out. And at that point, they were talking about, you know, how much storage capacity would be required to store the pattern of a human for a transporter, for example, and how the hard drives would stretch almost to the moon. And then I think about today, how much we've advanced from that. And so I love these types of specials. And The fact that this is on History, though, am I correct in thinking that this is being produced by Crewman Daniels? Because it's in our future, but it's on History.
I think that Crewman Daniels does have something to do with this, which I'm a little bit worried. Does that mean that we're involved in a temporal Cold War right now, Chris?
We might be. It would explain a lot of things.
Yeah, I'm a little disturbed. I'm not really sure to do this one, Chris. I'm not sure if we've done this before, or if this is really happening, or if it's a mirror version of myself. Goodness, this is a lot of questions right now.
I don't know. Sometimes I feel like I've done this show before. I'm not sure what's going on here. But if you'd like to watch this special, we'll put a link in the show notes. Hop over to history.com, and you can check it out over there. And then the last item in today's news, Matthew, also related to Star Trek Into Darkness. Now, the movie has barely opened in theaters. For a lot of us around the world, it still hasn't opened in theaters yet. But you can pre-order it on Blu-ray, and not only can you pre-order it on Blu-ray, but it is the number one selling item in the science fiction category on Amazon in the U.S.
Well, Chris, I've already got mine pre-ordered, and it's coming with a really awesome, snazzy phaser. It's an authentic phaser replica from the brand new JJ Universe. I cannot wait to get this. That's right, I spent a little extra, but I figured, what better way? Last time I got this great set that had all four of the insignias, the pin insignias, and I still have those. They're fantastic, and I can't wait. But there's a couple of different great deals here, Chris, for pre-orders from either Amazon or Best Buy.
Right, yeah, there are going to be several different versions of this. There's the DVD version, which from what I can tell is just the basic film. And then there's going to be the Blu-ray version, which includes Blu-ray, DVD, and a digital copy. And there's going to be the Blu-ray 3D version, which also has the standard Blu-ray, the DVD, and the digital copy. And the DVD one is $16.99. The Blu-ray is $19.99. And the Blu-ray 3D, $24.99. Those are the Amazon prices right now. And I pre-ordered as well, Matthew, and I pre-ordered the Blu-ray 3D version. And I think $24.99 is a great price, but the list price on that is $54.99. And I thought that was a little bit steep.
It is interesting. A lot of these Blu-rays, you'll notice that their list price is quite expensive. But I don't never see them for that price. You know, 3D Blu-ray sets, especially if you get them from Disney, some of the most expensive ones I've seen have been like $34, selling it like a, you know, Best Buy or something. But on a whole, usually, even, you know, the 3D Blu-ray, the Blu-ray, digital copy, DVD, all seem to be coming in about around $24, you know, $25 these days. So it's really good deal.
It's a little bit different over here. 3D Blu-rays do tend to run in the $50 to $60, maybe $70 range, which is just crazy. Now, regular Blu-rays are much less expensive, maybe like $25 range, and DVDs are like they are in the States. But of course, I went the 3D, so I went ahead and pre-ordered that. Now, you, as you said, you got the one with the phaser. And we should point out that not only is this a phaser replica, but it's actually done by Quantum Mechanics, by QMX. So this is a serious collectible. And as we were talking about on the other side of the room,
the other side of the room,
even though that version lists for $99 and is $79 pre-order price at Amazon right now, considering that you're getting a QMX phaser replica, that's a pretty good deal, I think.
Well, yeah, that and, you know, the 3D Blu-ray, standard Blu-ray, you know, DVD and digital copy. So, yes, that's a great deal. That's why I went ahead and snagged this up. And I'm kind of hoping that, you know, the price will go down just a little bit as we get closer.
Yeah,
you know, maybe
could,
be
possibly
more in a, you know, $75 range by the time we get there. But Best Buy is also offering some great deals. You can pre-order the Blu-ray, and you could get $8 coupon towards admission to see the film now in theaters, which is fantastic. And then also, you'll be getting a exclusive Into Darkness content on cinema now. And you'll also be able to watch the film Into Darkness approximately 2 to 3 weeks before the movie is available in stores. So if you just can't wait, you'll be able to watch the film a few weeks before it comes out on Blu-ray and DVD.
Yeah, that's an interesting offer that they've got going there. It's it'll be curious to see how they keep competing with each other for customer dollars. Amazon's also giving you a free copy of the Countdown to Darkness comic if you pre-order this movie. So lots of giveaways, whether you choose, you know, to order from Amazon, from Best Buy. I haven't checked Walmart, but they're always competing with Amazon and Best Buy in the prices. So who knows what they're going to be giving you as an incentive as things come out. I just find it interesting that you can already pre-order the movie when it's only been out in the theaters in the States for, it hasn't even been 2 weeks yet, right? It's a week and a half at this point, I believe.
Yeah, it is very crazy that they are already doing this.
And it's been on pre-order in Amazon for at least a week now. So it was basically like it came out, and the week following the opening weekend, it was already available for pre-order. And they don't tell us when the release date is going to be, but I'm kind of thinking that it might be out before the movie even lands in Japan on August 23rd. So I may be watching it on Blu-ray before I get it in the theater. Considering how many pre-orders they've already gotten for this movie, I wouldn't be surprised if the studio decides to release it as early as possible so they can actually bring in that money and convert that from pre-orders into actual cash.
I could see that happening. I also think, you know, Into Darkness seemed to have a pretty good second weekend up against some very stiff competition. And I have heard a lot of people wanting to go back and see this movie multiple times, not just twice. I mean, I've seen this movie 4 times already.
Wow.
But I know other people online that have really just loved it and they want to go back and see it again in the theater. And so I see this movie having a few more weeks left in it at the box office as a big contender, because I think the word of mouth of people who really have liked it is helping others want to go see it. Mm-hmm. It's also been converting some friends of mine. You know, we went to the film on Friday night, and one of my friends really had never seen very much Star Trek at all, but her reaction was, wow, this is what Star Trek is? This is pretty cool. So, you know, that kind of reaction, I'm really, again, very thankful for what JJ is doing for the franchise in that sense. Whether you like the film or not, it's making people pay attention to Star Trek again.
Picture me upon your knee, tea for two and two for tea. Can't you see how happy we're gonna be? There will be nobody near us to see us or hear us, no friends or relations. Weekend vacations won't have it known. We own a telephone. Dawn will break and I'll awake. Start to bake a sugar cake for you to take for all the boys to see. We will raise a family, a boy for you, a girl for me. Can't you see how happy we would be? Picture me upon your knee.
When Gene Roddenberry was putting together his first proposal for Star Trek, he jotted down a one-sentence synopsis, President Capone. And from that eventually came the very fine second season episode, A Piece of the Action. And today we're going to talk about this romp through 1920s Chicago. And to help us do that, we have with us, of course, our TOS editor, Landru, otherwise known by his full human name of Drew Stewart. Hey, Drew, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm excited to talk about my dad's favorite episode of Star Trek.
All right. So tell us about that.
Well, I just remember it's one of those episodes that he had on VHS that he taped from the reruns. And I don't remember watching it with him, but I know that he just cracks up at all the slang and basically everything we're going to talk about today.
And the boing boing springs during the fight scenes.
Yeah, that was fun too.
Was hilarious.
I actually was like typing. I had to look back up like, really?
What is going on here? Same for me. I had not watched this in, I think I watched it last year probably, but it had been a while and I've seen so much other stuff since then. And I was watching it again yesterday and I was cracking up through this episode. And I didn't remember this episode as being quite as funny as it is.
I think that's the thing that really makes this a winner. I mean, you don't realize you're going to laugh so much. But, you know, I was just watching it myself. I finished it, and I haven't laughed this much at an episode of television in a really long time. Like, it's just it just continually gets funnier and funnier as you watch through the episode, as you watch, you know, Kirk and Spock and even Scotty kind of get into the lingo.
One of the funniest things for me in here, just the accents that they're doing, and besides the fact that the accents themselves are funny, you know, one thing that cracks me up about it is that, remember that they based their entire society on a book that was left behind by the Horizon. So essentially what we are being told is that they learned Chicago gangster accents by reading a book.
I want to read this book because it looks like just a historical, you know, and then Capone did this. I mean, does it have like dialogue in it that like drops all of random letters and is full of just like vernacular? Is like is there a dictionary in the back and an appendix?
That's what I was thinking when I was watching it. There's like a glossary in the back of like every term.
Yeah. It's set up like The Lord of the Rings, where, you know, there's appendices in the background. Where
that teach you how to say the words.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the funniest part about the book, I thought, was the fact that all of them look like those big, huge family Bibles.
Oh, it's definitely like, just a family Bible with a new cover on it.
Yeah, it's just hilarious. Like, that's...
I mean, you can see the footnotes. You know, like, yeah. It's definitely just...
Yeah.
They found big Gutenberg Bibles.
It's awesome. But it's, you know, the mobs of Chicago. So, apparently, the Horizon had really big books.
Now, hold on. They carried around. They had more than one. Because Oxmus?
Oxmix is a Oxmix really weird name. Oxmix
had one, and Krakow had one.
Yeah.
Identical copies. Like, do each of the bosses have one? Did they... One of their first inventions was a printing press so they could reprint the book.
I know what it is. The Horizon, I mean, yes, it was a Daedalus class, you know, USS Horizon Federation Starship. But actually, you know, we've often wondered, why does the Daedalus class have this gigantic ball as the saucer section, right, instead of a saucer? Actually, the Daedalus class was a book transport ship for the Federation Press, and they were actually transporting an entire shipment of Chicago mobs of the 20s to space Barnes and Nobles over on Alpha Centauri.
Yeah, this makes sense.
It hadn't gone out of business yet.
Right.
Oh goodness, that's funny.
Well, this time was the first time that I really realized that they said that they left behind, the Horizon. They left behind textbooks, you know, on how to build radios and stuff. I don't think they left the gangsters thing behind. I think they left it behind as like some kind of, you know, something fun for them to read when they're done with textbooks. But then I guess they forgot that this one isn't a textbook. This is just, you know, and I think they just treated it as law, like as instructions, just like how to build a radio transmitter and stuff.
Well, it's just like, and the reason I say aliens love human books, it's just like on TNG and the Royale, where they find the astronaut and he has that cheesy novel about the Royale with him in his ship, and they create his whole reality based on that book. It's somehow human books, fiction books, are like blueprints for aliens.
That's the part I didn't get, because they left them textbooks and things. But then they picked out Chicago mobs of the 20s
because they had more than one
Bible
copy.
For life. Like, forget these like textbooks that teach us how to do stuff. we're going to choose the way our entire civilization should be based is around this one part of, you know, Earth history, the 20s, and the Chicago mobs of the 20s. That's the Bible.
Right. Well, they do mention that they left behind some books that taught them how to build radios and stuff like that. But if those were not that interesting, otherwise Kirk would have landed and they would have found like an entire society that's some sort of manufacturing city like in China these days, where all they do is just assemble radios. And
or they're all CB people.
Tin for good, buddy.
Yeah,
breaker.
Big daddy here, huh?
Instead, they all like, oh, I want to tell you something. We're going to make a hit. We're going to put a hit on him.
You know, put a bag on him, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, put him on ice.
I love the moment where he tells Scotty, is it Akmix, I think, right? Tells Scotty that, you know, do you understand me? And Scotty's like, I don't know.
Yes.
I do like that it's not like in Voyager when you have Tom Paris, who's an expert on everything old. So
right.
Like, yeah. You know, Scotty's is like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And Spock, of course, has no clue.
Well, and what's funny is I thought, you know, in this episode, you would kind of think that maybe Bones would pick up on some of this stuff more quickly. It just seems like that would be in his character. But no, it's Kirk who just picks this up and just runs with it like crazy.
I love by the end that Kirk actually becomes a gangster.
Yes.
Yeah.
he adopts the accent and everything.
Everything. Yeah.
Well, I mean, he creates Kirk's syndicate. I mean, who knows? This could give the Orions a run for their money.
Oh, it could. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so let's talk about the Prime Directive, because this is, in a way, one of these Prime Directive episodes. Mm-hmm. And Kirk actually says at the beginning of the episode that the encounter between this culture, which was just starting their industrial period, and the Horizon happened before the non-interference directive was in place. And so when they see how much the Horizon had affected this Iotian culture, he seems to feel the need to fix it. Now, of course, we know that Kirk often feels the need to fix other societies, even if there has been no Federation contact with them whatsoever.
Yeah. The Apple.
If he doesn't like how things are going, you know, he'll...
This Side of Paradise.
You know, A Taste of Armageddon.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, I've destroyed your computers, and now you have to actually kill each other for real. Figure it out, you know.
Return of the Archons.
So many of those. But here, I mean, at least there was contact with the Federation starship. So, Landry, when I was asking you what episode you want to do, you mentioned one of the Prime Directive episodes, and you know, mm-hmm. you threw out a few different ideas, and this was one of them. So what interests you about this episode in terms of the Prime Directive?
Well, I think of this episode as, like you said, one of the Prime Directive, the last half of the second season is almost exclusively someone has broken the Prime Directive and Kirk has to fix it. And usually it's the old, what do we have in the back lot? You know, what outfits do right. we have left over? I mean, this is where we get Patterns of Force. This is where we get right. Bread and Circuses and all this kind of stuff where it's just, you know, somebody broke the Prime Directive and they try to make things different and we've got to go fix it.
Yeah, which luckily makes you glad that Desilu wasn't making adult videos back then, right? Because you never know what episode we would have gotten in TOS season 2. What's left over?
It's an entire planet full of naked people.
Yeah. Whoa, Vulcan Love Slave number 5. That's where that program comes from.
Right. We had to wait until TNG with Justice to get that episode of a planet full of people.
Exactly.
Right?
That's exactly what Justice is. But I chose this one because it's definitely the most humorous on purpose. Because a lot of these other ones are, you know, like Bread and Circuses, you've got that terrible backdrop that's just like, oh, they're fighting in the Colosseum, and it's just a painted backdrop.
Right. And was a TV studio.
Yeah, the whole TV thing is laughable because it's so blatant in its, this is what TV is, and TV is bad. You're watching TV, you are bad. Wait, yeah. don't stop watching. And Patterns of Force is funny because of the Nazis and how ridiculous it is now. But this one's just ridiculous on purpose, and I think that's why it's definitely the highlight of the second half of the second season.
Well, this is a nice one, too, though. I mean, it gives you a real rounded idea of what the Prime Directive is. You know, it's supposed to be non-interference. You know, obviously, this is something, too, we learned that the Federation hasn't had its entire existence. And so, you know, these kind of problems can crop up because other ships beforehand had gone and influenced, and that's why they created this rule. So this as silly as this is, it gives us a lot of Star Trek, you know, lingo that we use all the time now, and what the Prime Directive really is and what it does and why we have it, and all of that really comes from this episode. And I think that's pretty cool that as you're laughing your butt off at this episode every 5 seconds, you're actually learning a lot about Star Trek lore, and you don't even realize it.
It shows you the why, and not, you know, the why in that, you know, oh, you saved this, you know, group of people from extinction and stuff. Just, it shows you why the Prime Directive is good. I mean, they stalled these people in the 1920s for 100 years. You know, who knows where they could have gone had the Horizon not interfered. Mm-hmm.
Well, and the idea of that, I love that they say that they've been arrested and they have arrested development, you know, that they think this is the end all and be all of existence. Like there is nothing better to search for, and that's our fault as the Federation.
Yeah, but Kirk doesn't inspire them really to go beyond it. He made them put aside their fighting and work together, but he didn't, like, flat out tell them, you know, this isn't a textbook. You know, you guys need to figure out your own way. He just kind of was just like, you're going to give us some money. We're going to come by, you see. And then they fly away. And he's just like, that'll be great.
Right.
They'll be fine.
Right. He didn't give them any instructions on how they could move forward.
He didn't really fix the problem.
Well, he fixed the problem that the bosses themselves had, which was that they felt that they needed to unify the society. And he fixed that problem by making Akmix the governor, I guess, and Krakow the lieutenant. And then he leaves that third guy over there just kind of like, what about me? What about me? And that's it, you know. And so you would see that the society is going to just continue on. So in a sense, he didn't really do anything to fix the damage that the Horizon did to the culture. He didn't really solve the Prime Directive.
I got the feeling
issue.
That he is thinking that if I unify this society and I can stop them with their infighting, that they will find a way to move forward. Because he's setting them against the book. You know, the book says, you know, that you should have these bosses, you know, and everybody should be fighting against everybody. That's what the book would say, because that's the story of the 20s mobster era. So by unifying them, he's moving them beyond that. He's going to set them on a course where they'll be able to create a different society that's not based on this book anymore. So I think that's his goal. It's not necessarily really stated all that well. You kind of have to infer that that's what Kirk is going for, because, you know, on the other side, Spock is all for this as well, the idea that a unified society will create a better society. You know, that, I mean, Spock wouldn't be on board if he didn't think this would lead to something completely different for them in the future as they move forward. So, you know, the episode is playing for the laughs more than it is everything else, and so it doesn't give us as much of a resolution, I think, as it could have. Because I felt like at the end of the episode, this is a planet that, you know, like Federation handlers basically kind of need to come in and kind of in the same way the Vulcans came in and watched over us after, you know, our first warp flight, that we would kind of have Federation people come in and do the same thing to help them move forward and kind of find a democratic type society to work towards, to help them with that transition. And that's just not something this episode is going to deal with, because it's funny.
Next time I go through the series, I should mark down each episode where they should bring in a cleanup crew and clean up the mess that either Kirk didn't fix or Kirk created. Like the apple. Oh, they're all having sex and murdering people now. Okay, I guess we should send down a cleanup crew and ease them.
There could be an entire...
call it the Kirk cleanup crew.
Right. There could be an entire department in Starfleet that's just people whose job is to clean up after Kirk.
This is why Temporal Investigations hates Kirk.
Yes. Right. Maybe they're the
That's what I was
crew.
Thinking of. Yeah. It's just they actually have their own ship and they just kind of they shadow the Enterprise. Everywhere the Enterprise goes, they're just a couple of light years behind and they're just following them. That way they don't have to tax their engines too much. They'll arrive just at the right time to start cleaning everything
up. USS Dustbin reporting for duty.
Right. I love here that Akhmix, he wants a very simple thing from Kirk. And I thought, you know, it's quite reasonable. He just wants Kirk to give him a bunch of Starfleet weapons or, you know, fancy heaters so he can make a few hits. That's it. You know, it's real simple. And it reminded me of the Countdown to Darkness comics. And this is essentially what April wants from Kirk in the Countdown to Darkness comics, where he wants some weapons, some firepower from the Enterprise so that he can resolve this civil war. And that's what throws Kirk in the comic into the middle of this kind of quandary
into
regarding
darkness.
The Prime Directive.
Yeah. Exactly. That's a really good point, Chris. And I hadn't thought about that, but that, you know, Countdown to Darkness is a dark, very dark take on a piece of the action, and that's excellent. You know,
that's a lot of similarities.
This, yeah,
I actually thought it was more similar to A Private Little War about you know, the escalating arms race, and you know, maybe if we just gave him phasers, this whole thing would be over. That's the episode that I was brought to mind when I was
think you can
it.
See, yeah, both. This Definitely. One just reminded me just of the simple request of, I want weapons, and Kirk's like, no, you know, I can't do that. And that's the same situation that we had in the comic.
I kind of thought, too, it was interesting when Kirk gets asked that question, they go down, you know, the whole, like, very first part of this episode, Kirk is annoyed that he's being pushed around like this. Like, he is just, he is not in this game. And I love the kind of, like, the switch about halfway through where, you know, Kirk realizes how he needs to play this game, which is, I just kind of need to become the mob boss myself. And I just like that, though, because he's just, Shatner is so pissed when he's just getting pushed around by all these guys. He's like, don't you know? Basically, he's thinking, I feel like he's thinking in his head, do you not know who I am? Do you not know what I can do? And he just can't wait to stun some people from the ship so they will stop pushing him around.
Definitely. Well, I mentioned the accents earlier. Now, the language itself is really fun in this episode. And it's especially fun because we're used to our crew talking to aliens with the Universal Translator, and they're speaking completely different languages. I mean, they're even trying to communicate with Tholians with their kind of squeaking sound sometimes. And somehow they're able to do things like this talking to aliens. Here they're both speaking English, but they just can't quite understand each other. It seems that the Universal Translator just wasn't quite programmed with 1920s Chicago gangster lingo.
Yeah, you don't call somebody up on the blower and ask for some fancy heaters. It's just not normal Starfleet procedure.
I don't remember anyone ever, you know, saying, don't give me those baby blue eyes to Data.
Yeah. Well, they weren't so blue. They were like creepy yellow.
Were they flirting? I thought that was weird.
Yeah.
I put that in my notes. I'm like, is Krakow flirting with him?
Yeah. I kind of, you know, DeForest Kelly had great eyes, so, you know, it's, maybe he was swinging that way. Who knows?
And I like Spock's question, too, when they first... Oh, here's the thing. I also loved this at the beginning, where... Akmix is, or the boss. I love Kirk's reaction when Uhura tells him that the boss is communicating with us. Oh, the boss. Okay, well, Kirk's thinking, I'm the boss, you know. He's not the boss. I'm the boss. But when he gives them directions and Kirk says, you know, where would be a convenient place? And he's like, oh, you know, there's an intersection down the block and there's a yellow fire hydrant. And then Scotty's, and I'm thinking that Kirk's going to say, you know,
what?
I think you could give us some better directions than that. But no, Scotty's like, I've got it right here. Here's that yellow fire hydrant. And then they beam down directly next to the yellow fire hydrant.
In the middle of the street. You'd think if Scotty could see the fire hydrant, he could see all the 1920s cars and not to beam them in the middle of the street.
And the Tommy guns and yeah.
Well, you know, it reminds me of 2009 where Scotty's like, is there is any sense to the alien ship? I'll be putting you somewhere in the cargo bay. So Scotty's not known for his like awesome beaming, you know, people into the right place. You know, the middle of the street, that's fine. It's close
sure.
enough to the, yeah.
Well, and I like how once somebody's broken the prime directive, you don't have to change out of your outfits. You know, just go down right. in your bright blue outfits. You'll be fine.
Exactly.
Faces but, on stun.
Okay, so, yeah, he beamed them into the middle of the street. That wasn't great, but he did get them right next to the yellow fire hydrant.
He's got good aim.
It's the only one on the planet, so.
So I love that.
My favorite accent, I think, is when Kirk puts on that suit. He's got the hat, the fuzzy hat, which you can tell in HD. It's just, I don't know why
yes.
it's fuzzy, but it's a fuzzy
really
hat.
Fuzzy. Well, they had some extra felt laying around, so.
I guess. It's too bad they ran out of all those extra hats, because if you notice, all of the people brought in at the end are all wearing the same black bowler hat. The identical
yeah.
black bowler hat. I noticed at this time, I'm like, oh, that's disappointing. But anyway, as soon as Kirk puts on that fuzzy fedora, he's got the accent. He's got it down. And Shatner is just eating it up. Like, I imagine that when he was a kid, he's pretty old. When he was a kid, they probably played, you know, Chicago gangsters. And
yeah,
maybe he'd been working on this accent his whole life. And he finally was like, you know, finally, I don't have to do Shakespeare or this Star Trek stuff. I can just be a Chicago gangster.
All the whole time, he just can't wait to say, ah, Krakko, I'm going to put the bag on you. Yeah, this, I think, you watch through the series and there's certain episodes that are, you know, quintessentially Shatner. And so, you know, you watch City on the Edge of Forever. That's just one of his best episodes. And then you get to something like this. And again, this is one of his best episodes because it's everything that we kind of love about Kirk. You know, it's not like the Apple or Taste of Armageddon where you're kind of like, Kirk, that's kind of the dumbest idea that you're doing right now. You know, he's going with what he has to work with, and there's not a lot here. And then, two, it's classic Kirk where he's just making this crap up as he goes along. And I just love that kind of Kirk where he's the kind of guy who can think on his feet really quickly mm-hmm. and come up with a solution that's it's going to work. You know, you don't understand how it's going to work, and it all comes together. I mean, nothing better than a guy creating the game of Thisbin, you know, out of thin air, because he needs to get out of a situation. That's what we love about Kirk.
There's really no, like, time cuts. I mean, I don't imagine that they spent more than 90 minutes on this planet. I mean, because it's all the same day. They drive back and forth, and I think they cut some there. But, like, there's no point where Shatner or where Kirk could be somewhere to think about something else and then come up with his plan. You know, you could see the wheels turning. He's like, let's get these people's clothes, and then I can pretend to be this. And you're just watching the man work.
The card game is so hilarious to me because I almost feel like Shatner's improvising. It feels like total improvisation. He's like, you know, that's a this other game. It's called Fizbin. Yeah, and here are the rules, and the rules are brilliant. I love the rules to Fizbin. I love a game where, you know, it depends on the time of day, the day of the week.
I love a game where you can tell somebody you don't want to get a third jack because then you'd be disqualified. And then when he gets a third jack, you say, that's incredible. You're so awesome. And the guy believes
you.
You
got a third jack! Lucky you!
How wonderful for you!
I mean, Mr. Spock, what are the odds of getting a Royal Fizbin? I've never calculated them, Captain.
They're astronomical.
Said to be astronomical. And the look on Spock's face after he hears that they're astronomical is just... I mean, Nimoy is also giving a fantastic performance here. He is responding to everything that Shatner's doing. And just, you know, by the time that they get back to Oxmus's office and, you know, Spock is holding the guns on him and he's like, I suggest you sit down, Oxmix. You know that this is the best episode of TOS ever when Spock has decided that he needs to talk like a mobster.
That's right, Matthew. You told me this is your favorite TOS episode, isn't it?
It is. It is. And I think it's because this, and you know, this is kind of a, I guess it's not really a final thought, but obviously because we're not there yet, but it's classic TOS. Like, everything you love about TOS is in this episode. It's a little bit goofy. It's silly. It's fun. But all the characters are themselves completely. I mean, Spock is on his game. McCoy is on his game. Spock is on his game. Scotty even gets into the action. He gets a piece of the action. And so it's one of those episodes that you come away with just like, this is why I love Star Trek TOS. This is the best.
You know who did not get a piece of the action in this episode? Is Sulu, because he's not in the episode, and Chekhov, because his only line is, we are approaching Sigma Iosha 2. And that's it for him.
And then they don't need him anymore. Uhura doesn't that's do much right. either, except look quizzically at her communicator, because she's like, what are you guys doing on the radio station?
That's right. But, you know, I think Eddie Paskey got a lot more time in this episode than...
He's
either
sitting there the whole time. but back to Fizbin, I had to laugh because it'd been a while. I forgot why he brought up Fizbin. And I'm like, okay, you know, because he doesn't want to have to fight his way out. But then he fights his way out. I'm like, why? Why couldn't they just all stood up and then punched them all in the face? I mean, because that's what they did. It's not like they were moving into better positions or...
Well... Let's not forget that he was able to use the table as a weapon. And if they tried to attack them from their position sitting on boxes and crates, they would have had access to a card table as a weapon.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
You see.
And I will say that it gives Spock the ability to be right behind one of the guys without them, you know, monitoring him, that he can just do the neck pinch and so that there's only two guys left to get taken care of. So it's a little bit silly, but it works for the story. I mean, I don't question it because it just it makes that Kirk sense, you know, when we're this is just how Kirk operates, you know, and it's fantastic.
Well, imagine how different this episode would be without the card game and without the creation of Fizbin. I mean, you would lose the heart of this episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Well, and I, you know, the creative bluffing that Kirk does throughout this whole episode, it reminds me of the end of the Corbomite maneuver. And, you know, that's, you know, Kirk is famous for kind of bluffing his way out of things, that, you know, he's just making up as he goes along. And this is just another great episode where Kirk, he's just making crap up. And
what
you
do
know.
You think about in Arena? What if Kirk had taught the Gorn how to play Fizbin?
No, let's not fight. Let's play this game. Come here.
Yeah, you're going to want to learn this. It's awesome. I mean, I don't have any cards, but we can play with rocks. You want these shiny ones, but only on Tuesday.
What day is today?
I don't know.
It's Thursday.
Oh, goodness. But, Matthew, you said that this episode has everything that you love about TOS in it. And another thing, as we've said here, another purpose for the card game was to set up the fight scene. And, you know, every TOS episode really needs to have a fight scene. And this episode has, I think I counted at least 3 fight scenes, including the very comical one with the bouncy spring sound effects and all when Kirk is going to break out. But the only thing that could have made the card game fight scene better, of course, would have been if there had been an Andorian.
I've been attacked by an Andorian.
Yes, I was a little disappointed. I mean, there's all of these great fight scenes. There's no Andorian. And at no time, I thought that maybe, you know, Kirk was going to throw up the table and do a barrel roll into the guy in the chair there. But that didn't happen, and I was a little disappointed. Yeah.
But it would have been great to have an Andorian with the holes in the hat so his antenna could come out, and then speaking with this gangster accent.
His blue antenna coming out of that blue hat that Kirk's wearing.
The aliens in this episode are pretty disappointing, you know, exactly humans.
Yes, yes.
I mean, you would think that they were the crew of the Horizon because it was lost 100 years ago, and they were marooned on this planet, and they modeled themselves after, you know, 1920s Chicago gangs. But no, these are actually natives of this planet who happen to look exactly like humans. But again, you know, we talk about things they had laying around the light. Well, they had a lot of human actors laying around the light.
Yeah, that's true.
Including Vic Tayback, who I love seeing in here, because every time I watch this episode, I'm like, it's Mel!
Kiss my grits?
Yes.
Nice. Very nice.
Mel's Diner on Alice, that was Vic Tayback, and every time I see it, I just think of Alice.
You know, Chris, I kept thinking that they were going to, you know, end up at the Susan B. Anthony Hotel and run into the Bosom Buddies. I kept waiting for that to happen because, you know, it would fit really perfectly in this nice backlot that they have, and they never did that, and I was really disappointed.
It would have. Like,
really,
if the Horizon...
Missed. Yes.
If the Horizon had been carrying an old VHS tape of Bosom Buddies, and they encounter the planet, and the entire culture was based on cross-dressing.
That's a totally different type of planet. I'm talk about thigh gun.
Oh, they have a lot of extra places to conceal weapons in that case.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting, you know, too, at just Kirk kind of bouncing back and forth through these bosses. And, you know, the beginning, Oxmix doesn't really offer him anything. He gets taken over. You know, he gets picked up by Krakow's men, you know. Krakow has a much better deal for Kirk because it comes with a broad, you know. I mean, he just snaps his finger and Kirk gets a woman giving him a nice, you know, neck massage. And so
I don't know about that. She was just kind of poking him. Like, she didn't really know what to do. She's just like,
I just thought that was funny. I was like, oh, this dude knows Kirk a little bit better than the other guy, because this might win him over.
It's too bad that she wasn't massaging his ears, because, you know, we find out on DS9 that Quark actually knows about the game Fizban, and he actually knows the rules of Fizban, and he's going to teach Odo how to play Fizban. It would have been cool if, in addition to learning about Fizban, this was also the origin of Umox, and that Quark had heard the story about ear massages on Sigma Iosha 2, and that's how Ferengi got their Umox fetish.
Mm. That would be interesting. I wouldn't have thought of all the things that Kirk was into, that just having his ears rubbed was really going to, you know, be the thing. But apparently these Iotians know some sort of pressure point there that we don't know about.
Exactly.
Oh my
god, there was so much missed potential in this episode, wasn't there? Wow. I never, you know, I've watched this episode dozens of times over the years, who knows how many times I've watched this, and I've never realized until our discussion today just how many missed opportunities there were in this episode.
Well, this is one of those episodes too where you see the difference between the JJ versus Kirk and the, you know, Prime Kirk, is that JJ versus Kirk knows how to drive, and he knows to drive really well. Mm-hmm. This Kirk does not. He apparently did not learn how to drive when he was growing up in Iowa, but man, you put him in a car and he wants one.
Well, let's not forget, in the JJ version of A Piece of the Action, Kirk and Spock, they would have torn down that street in fake Chicago, and then suddenly there would have been a giant quarry in the middle of the city, and they would have had to both jump out of the car as it plummeted to its fiery demise.
No, they just crash into the building and then shoot Krakow and be like, okay, now you're the boss, Oxmus. Have a nice day, and beam up.
I thought they were going to, you know, jump out, the car would crash, the police officer would be there. What is your name, son? James Tiberius Kirk.
I'm the boss.
I'm the boss.
And what he says, look,
it would have been great if he had been in the car too, and him and Spock are blasting Born in the USA by the boss.
And then he tells the police officer, he's like, look, if you don't tell my mom, I'll cut you 40% of my next allowance.
Just don't tell my uncle. It's fine. Don't worry about the car.
I tried to logic it out, like, maybe, you know, why Kirk's dad didn't have a Corvette. Like, because you'd think he'd really know how to drive a Corvette if his dad was still alive. But,
he didn't have a Corvette in the Prime timeline. And speaking of knocking out Krakow, you know, make putting a hit on them, how did you guys like the fact that apparently the Enterprise's phasers, which are designed to inflict damage on enemy starships, can be set to stun?
I don't understand it.
I don't understand it, but it makes me think that this is a good idea, because, I mean, you're doing, you know, crowd control on a planet or whatever, you would need a way to, you know, if you need to mass stun people, what better way to do it than from, you know, the ship? So, what I don't understand is how you could get phasers powerful enough to go through the atmosphere of a planet and still have enough power to knock people out on the street.
I don't think amount of stunning that's going on.
Exactly.
I don't think that phasers on stun are necessarily a weaker frequency. I think that they're a different frequency that, like, knocks you out instead of disintegrates you.
Mm,
so I don't think, like, you know, they turn the phasers down really, really low and it, you know, knocks people out.
Turn that dial down to one before hit the button.
It's got a dial on it that says, you know, 1 to you know, 9. I'm looking at the phaser right now. And so,
mine's over there.
Apparently, you know, I just switch it, and that's, you know, how I set the
Those may be nine different settings. Maybe there's more than just stun and kill and maim.
Well, as Dennis Miller said on the Off-White album, he's pretty sure that those phasers have a melancholy setting as well. You know, in the future Apple, after they get done making computers, they start making phasers, and you have to be able to adjust that stun setting because the future European Union, of course, put restrictions on Apple where they had to limit the amount of stunning that could go on, and because, you know, you don't want to leave it up to the users of the devices to choose on their own.
Oh, man.
All right. Well, let's talk about the solution, Kirk's solution to planetary unity. So I guess you could basically sum up the solution as Federation gets 40% cut and we'll come check on
something.
You once a year. You guys work together because the Federation is taking over the whole ball of wax. I don't know. What did you think about Kirk's
Is there an industry
solution?
that they're squeezing? I mean, like, these mobsters, if everybody's in a world where everyone's a mobster, who do they, like, get money from? Who do they lean
there,
on?
There is the radio commercial that Spock hears for Bang Bang.
Yeah, it's the best little heater out there.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, I figured, I mean, because, you know, you're walking the street there with Kirk and Spock, and you see, like, a laundromat, and it looks like there's a place to eat, and, I mean, so there's obviously businesses that get run, and so there is some kind of industry going on. Just don't see a lot of that. That's my guess. I mean, just from
I think
kind
it's
of
basically, there are two industries. There's weapons manufacturing, and there are all the deep dish pizza joints.
Well, along
and the
with
automotive,
yeah, you, along with your Italian tailors industry. For those really nice suits. And,
okay, that's true. Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, you got a lot going on here.
Don't forget the hat shops.
Oh, the haberdasheries, of course. excellent. Yes. I mean, a man cannot be without a great haberdasher.
And someone's got to make the cards, also for Fizbin. So, there is a lot of stuff going, but they're very related industries.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. It seems
Do
like...
Do they have money? I mean, 40% of what? I mean, we never see any kind of
No, the
money
is on the table that when they're playing cards and Kirk comes over, there's money on the table.
But what are they printed against? I mean, are they...
Yeah.
is it like Bitcoin? It doesn't really matter what it's against.
Yeah.
There's a limited amount of it. That's why they don't have computers, you know, to generate Bitcoin. So they have some guy over in a corner with an abacus, and he's just sliding those beads really, really fast trying to generate money. Iocean Bitcoin.
Oh, goodness.
It's an interesting solution that, you know, that the, you know, Kirk says, you know, at the very end that they'll give their cut back into the national treasury, basically, so that it'll go back into infrastructure for, you know, the government that's going to be created under, you know, Krakow and Oxmix. So you're going to get some kind of push forward into moving them forward. And so, I mean, it works as a solution when you put a little bit of thought into it, I think. And if you do hope that Kirk will actually send people back to this planet every year.
And that he'll warn them.
Exactly. Unlike when he just drops Khan off on a planet and then they don't visit him for 20 years and one of the planets in the system blows up and really
Still
pisses
nobody
the guy
visits
off.
Him.
Yeah. So, which results in the death of your best friend. So,
feel pretty stupid now.
Yeah. But it is a really interesting type solution for Kirk to come about, because what I thought was interesting too is that Kirk is dealing with what he has, and he's not trying to move these people forward by just saying, okay, I'm going to give you a whole bunch of new rules to follow, which kind of is what Kirk will do, like in the Apple or Taste of Armageddon This, he's pushed them forward, and now he's going to let them figure it out on their own. Like, he hasn't moved them out of being mobsters. He's just moved them into being
good mobsters.
Better mobsters, more altruistic mobsters. And so, and he's hoping that that push towards unity will change the course of their history.
Which may sound odd, but actually in Japan, we actually have a very, very organized mob system in Japan. It's, if you've heard the term Yakuza before, you've probably heard Yakuza. But they actually operate like businesses. They have storefronts, actually. You know, you can have like an office here, and they print, you know, magazine, Yakuza magazines, how to be a good mobster. But what they also do is that if there's a disaster, like the earthquake a couple of years ago, they're also very organized, and they're one of the first groups out to actually help the society and help everyone, and, you know, pass out water or food. Or so it's kind of like a, you know, they do have their run-ins. You know, there are occasional gunfights, which is very shocking here because you can't get guns in Japan, but of course they can get them. And that happens on rare occasions, but they do operate kind of like maybe Kirk is setting them up for here, which is a much more organized, altruistic form of mobsters.
I want you to do me this favor, and someday I will come to you, and I will ask you to do something for me, and you will do it.
That's pretty much what Kirk's saying. Like, we're going to do you this favor, and then one day we're going to ask you for a favor, which is 40%, and you're going to give it to us.
And then we're going to give it back to you.
Exactly, and then we'll give it back.
You give us the 40%, and we're going to give it back to you.
Because we have no use for money.
Oh, man.
It's the future.
All right. Well, I think we're at the end of this episode. So, final thoughts on a piece of the action, Landry.
Piece of the action is definitely, if you haven't seen or don't watch TOS and you're one of those people who's just like, it's stupid cheese, you have to watch this episode. Yes, it is stupid cheese, but there are some deeper things that are kind of touched on. It's got a great mix of humor. Well, just a great mix of humor. I guess it doesn't really mix too much other into it. But it's a fun episode of TV, and you will not have wasted your time in watching it. And I would give it 10 fuzzy hats. Fuzzy fedoras.
All right. How about you, Matthew?
You know, I mean, I already showed my hand, obviously. This is my favorite episode of TOS, and I have loved this ever since I first saw it. And it's this episode that gives you a clear picture of who Kirk and Spock and McCoy really are and just how they work together so well. It's a perfect kind of picture of that trinity. And it's also everything that TOS, I think, just does really well in its firing on all cylinders. I mean, Shatner is at the top of his game here. Nimoy is hysterical. Scotty has some great lines. So does Bones. This is an episode that you can't help but spend the entire episode laughing. You come away smiling. And with Star Trek, you know, sometimes I want it to make me think, and sometimes I want it to make me dive into some serious issues. And Drew, you're right. You can do that in this episode. It teaches us a lot about kind of Star Trek lore, the Prime Directive, why we have it, giving us a prime example of why Starfleet follows this rule. But at the same time, this is one of those episodes I just come away with smiling, and I'm so glad I've watched it. And so I, yes, definitely encourage you, if you're not a TOS fan, go find this episode on Netflix. You will not be sorry you spent 45 minutes laughing. It's good stuff. And so I would give this 10 out of 10 thigh guns.
Oh, wow. Well, yeah, I agree with both of you guys. You know, this is an episode where if you want to find the seeds, like Matthew's saying, of the Prime Directive and the interference and the impact that can have on a society, it's certainly in here. If you don't want to do that and you just want to laugh and just have fun at just the perfect storm of everything about TOS that we all love. It's all in here as well. So you can watch this on, you know, two different levels if you want. And this episode, it has some little throwaway things in here at the end. You know, McCoy says that he left his communicator on the planet. He left his communicator there. And, you know, that opens up the whole box again of, well, what happens if we leave Federation technology, advanced technology behind on a world? And it's sort of the inspiration for the Enterprise episode, The Communicator, where Malcolm actually leaves his communicator on this planet and they have to go back down and retrieve it. And there's another game. I had this on PC, I believe it was, but there was a Nintendo game that was the 25th anniversary Star Trek game. And it was based on this episode as well, where the Enterprise is going into the system of the Sigma Aoyasha system here, and they get thrown out of the system and they come back and they find out that the reason that they were thrown out was that the Aoyasians had developed some sort of technology based on Bones' communicator that he left on the planet. So there's some spin-off of this as well, which is really fun. But I just love everything about this episode myself. So definitely go check it out. And Matthew, you mentioned Netflix. StarTrek.com just announced this week, I believe, that at least if you're in the United States, you can stream every episode of every Star Trek series now on StarTrek.com as well. So even if you're not on Netflix, you can go check it out over there. Now, of course, I can't do that if I try to do it. This content is not available in your region, but that's okay. I've got them on DVD and I've got them on Hulu, so I'm pretty much set. But definitely fantastic episode of TOS. I love this one. I'm going to give it a Royal Fizbin.
Oh, astronomical rating.
Yeah. Not many episodes can pull that one off. All right. Well, before we go, Landru, tell everyone where they can find you around the internets.
They can find me on Twitter at 005, all spelled out without an H. They can find me on Trek FM, where I occasionally write, should write more. And I say that every time. And that's really about it.
All right. That sounds great. Well, thanks for joining us today, Landru.
No problem.
Chris, that was so much fun getting to talk with Drew about a piece of the action. I just love this episode, and getting to talk about with you guys was a blast. You know, I laughed, I think, as much talking about the episode as I did actually just watching the episode.
Yeah, right. It was a fun discussion. I knew going in that this was going to be one of those ready rooms where we probably laughed more often than not going through it, because you really can't help it. There are some great points in the episode, as we discussed in our final thoughts, but bottom line for this episode for me is it's just fun. I mean, you've got fight scene after fight scene after fight scene. You've got Kirk just making stuff up to, you know, weasel his way out of a situation. You've got Spock kind of getting out of character to play along with his captain. There's just everything you could want from TOS in this episode.
It really is.
Oh, Matthew, I don't think I mentioned this in the show. I mean, I talked about Enterprise all through the news, but in this particular episode, as an homage, you know, Travis grew up on the Horizon. Not the same one in this episode, of course. He grew up on the ECS Horizon. But in the episode of the same name on Enterprise, when he goes back and you see his old quarters on that ship, there actually is a hardbound copy of Chicago Mobs of the 20s on his bookshelf in his quarters, as well as a little model of the USS Horizon.
Is it the same size book, like the very large family Bible size version of this book, or is it just the compact version?
You know, I'd have to go back and look at the picture to be sure about that, but I believe it is quite thick, so it might be the same one. Yeah, that's true. But yeah, it was great fun talking about this. So why don't we tell everyone where to find us if they want to share their thoughts on a piece of the action or anything we talked about in news. You know, maybe they have their own infographic they'd like to see from space.com. You can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send to a show and choose the Ready Room, and that'll come to us. You can go over to our forums at trek.fm/forums. There's an area there for the Ready Room, one for the original series, and you can chat with us and other listeners. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm, and of course on Twitter under username trekfm. And Matthew, what if people would like to look you up yourself? You know, hopefully not put a hit on you, but just talk to you about Star Trek.
Well, now I'm a little worried about putting my information out there, but you know, if
you don't want Krakow to know where to find you,
right?
Do you?
If you would like to be friends, enjoy some good conversation, talking, of course, Into Darkness these days, as well as Man of Steel and all the other great films coming out, anything like that. You find me at MattRushing02 on Twitter. And then, of course, you know, do some shows here with you, Chris, The Orb, where we talk all things Deep Space Nine all the time. And then talk books and comics, where we get to do that on Literary Treks. And so if either of those things you really enjoy, please find us there. Now, Chris, if somebody's looking to just be friends with you, not do anything nefarious, where can they find you on the internet?
Right. As long as you're not planning to put me on ice, you can find me on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. And you can find me pretty much everywhere in social media under that username. And of course, Matthew, as you just mentioned, on the Orb and Literary Treks with you, as well as sometimes on Matterstream, my interview show. And got a lot of things going on. So give me a follow and say hello. And I'd be happy to chat with you. And of course, if you want to play Star Trek Rivals card game with either Matthew or me, we will give you our user ID if you hit us up on Twitter as well. And before we go, we would like to invite you once again to check out our sponsor, Squarespace. It is the best CMS, the best hosting you'll find. I promise you, you'll absolutely love it. And as a Trek FM listener, you can save 10% off your lifetime purchase on new accounts. Just go to squarespace.com/trek and use offer code TREK5 to take advantage of that offer. All right, well, Matthew, it looks like we've finished another show, so I'm going to go and put a bag on it.
Chris, that sounds great. And you know what? It's time to stick some cement galoshes in it, because the Ready Room is done.
Recording. Iotian women's thigh guns.
Now, I like that.
Yeah, that was fun, too.
Yeah. Nothing like going to bed and finding a thigh gun there.
Problems only Matt has.
Who do you think I take home? My God.
I don't know.
No, this is a...
Apparently Iotians. Now we do know.
Yeah, well, Iotians, yeah. So.
That's right.